Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, I hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Walt Frazier was my first ever favorite player. That love never goes away. That said, his Mount Rushmore is ridiculous. He put together his Mount Rushmore of NBA legends and somehow managed to leave Michael Jordan off of it. This is what he said. Walt Frazier in Sports Illustrated said, Steph Curry was the only unanimous MVP. They should apologize to Russell and Chamberlain for what they did for the game and the dominance they have. Jordan is up there too. Well deserved. LeBron, I don't think, is up there with those guys. He's not on Mount Rushmore. But Jabbar, Chamberlain, Russell, Robertson, Oscar, he means, those guys were magnificent in what they did for the game. So this got a lot of attention, of course. And it was painted, I think, as an older player just sort of standing up for his era.
Right.
And that's exactly what it is. But candidly, any Mount Rushmore that does not include Michael Jordan is really not even worth discussing.
Agreed.
Right?
Same page there. Michael
right.
Jordan is the greatest basketball player to ever do it.
So
any era.
I want to present to you,
okay,
because there's no one whose basketball opinion I respect more than yours, my Mount Rushmore, because I've been doing this for years. Okay. These three, I think, are no-brainers.
Same page.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the most accomplished basketball player ever. Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player ever, and Bill Russell is the greatest winner ever. Those three have to go on. The fourth spot could be occupied. You could make a very good argument for Magic Johnson if you wanted to. You could make a great argument for Wilt Chamberlain if you wanted to. You could argue for Oscar Robertson if you wanted to, or you could put on the player I put in fourth, which is LeBron James. My fourth face on my all-time Mount Rushmore is LeBron. I will fully accept people arguing for Oscar, Wilt, Magic in that spot. But that is my Mount Rushmore. And candidly, I think the first three aren't even debatable.
It's funny that your Mount Rushmore mirrors mine. Great minds think alike.
So you have LeBron as well?
No.
Okay, so the three.
No.
So it mirrors yours, but
no,
not quite.
No, I don't have LeBron. Uh-uh. So a couple of things. I love what you said about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I want to frame this for everybody because a lot of times people don't do their history. Okay, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won four championships in high school,
yep.
Won three in college.
Only because he wasn't allowed to play as a freshman.
Correct.
Right.
And won six in the NBA, six MVPs, is the NBA's all-time leading scorer, and the skyhook is the most unstoppable shot in the history of basketball.
Yeah. Yep.
Michael Jordan also won a championship in college, baseline jump shot. Terrific defender, all defense multiple times, first team multiple times, scoring champion, dunk champion, just electric. Jesus in basketball shoes.
Yes.
And you talked about Bill Russell, the greatest champion the sports have seen. But my fourth spot, and I want to ask you this question. When did LeBron pass Magic? Like, have I been missing something? When did LeBron pass Magic? You remember a guy in 1979 won a championship in college?
Yes.
And then come right into the league and set it by storm, win multiple MVPs, win five championships, was the face of the franchise in Los Angeles, spearheaded Showtime, the only 6'9 point guard to ever do it and revolutionize the game with an amazing smile to help the game go from being on tape delay to now we got 10 teams playing on Christmas Day and players load managing. When did LeBron pass Magic?
Well, I'm not going to fight you because, as I said, I could completely agree with Magic. I don't know that load managing is exactly where you want to go with it, but I agree with you. Magic belongs on there. He played with Kareem. Listen, we're splitting hairs. To me, LeBron, Magic, Oscar Robertson, Wilt Chamberlain, you could argue for any of them. Again, any list that doesn't include the rest. This is something we could talk about forever. Thank you for watching ESPN on YouTube. For more sports highlights and analysis, be sure to download the ESPN app. And for live streaming sports and premium content, subscribe to ESPN+.
All right, today's It's My House is titled Immigrants Business Mount Rushmore. Immigrants Business Mount Rushmore. We cover at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. As like in yesterday, we talked about LaTosha Harlins. LaTosha Harlins was died what 30 years ago. And she was 15 years old, and right in her neighborhood in Los Angeles, California. The family where that owned the convenience store or liquor store where she was killed traveled over 5,907 miles to purchase that building. So today we're going to put out there, based on the Mount Rushmore model. Now, I just played in the sports community, be it black or white here in the United States, when you say, what's your Mount Rushmore, you pick the best four players that you think that are all-time greats. And you know, that changes from person to person. Of course, Mount Rushmore is a physical location, which has four presidents. Which at the time they put that up, people, you know, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, and but Teddy Roosevelt. So today, if you have a immigrant business Mount Rushmore. Because particularly in the black community, I'm using this as a barometer. Essentially, immigrants who travel thousands of miles, you've got hundreds, actually you have thousands of people that are migrating from Central America to Texas or the southern borders of the United States, that's Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. Some of those people, as we stated last week, some of those people, and from Mexico City to Chicago, Illinois, what was that about? It's over 1,000 miles. It's over the, but from, hold on, you know what, from Mexico City to the one of the, I forgot the border city, but one of the border cities in the United States, that's about 1,000 miles, so 600 to 1,000 miles. Some of those people within the next 24 months, that's 2 years, 24 to 60 months, that's 5 years, will become rich in the United States. Coming to the border, getting into the country legally or illegally, but they don't. It appears that they don't have much of financial resources. So we're going to take a quick musical interlude. Then I'm going to come back with my immigrants' business Mount Rushmore. These are four places, and I'm using them as a barometer. Using them as a barometer of where immigrants will come into this country. Now, the common denominator in this is all of them will get rich in the black community. All of them will get rich in the black community. And they've been doing it for decades. So I'm going to put mine out there. They're pretty high-profile barometers. And these four cities, based on four individuals, which you probably guys all already know, because, see, as, you know, Jalen Rose and the other guy that he was talking to, what here's in my opinion, and I'm black, where a lot of black people miss it. When we talk about Mount Rushmores, we're talking about athletes and entertainers. Whereas people around the globe that pay attention to the George Floyd incidents in the world, they have a business Mount Rushmore. And they gravitate to those cities where they can make the most money. But the common denominator in all of it is essentially they're all black neighborhoods that are moderate to low income in nature. So anyway, we're going to take this quick 2 to 3 minute break. Then I'm going to come back with my immigrant business Mount Rushmore. And if you got one, you can call us at 619-768-2945.
Can we make just one big choir? Now, you know, in choirs, we got to rock. Y'all ready to rock? Let's go. Good, come on. Listen. Are you
which Nothing's Too Hard for God. I played that song for primarily one reason. It has nothing to do with, well, I won't go that far, but that's off the latest, that was part of the soundtrack of the latest installment of the television show, Snowfall. Snowfall, which, depending on who you talk to, is loosely based on a life of Freeway Rick Ross, who he'll be in here a couple of Fridays from now. We're going to have him on here for 1 hour. The TV show Snowfall takes place in South Central Los Angeles, a black community of Los Angeles, California. Now, the TV show's fictional, but in real life, Freeway Rick Ross was real. According to various government sources, he was earning as much money as Walmart through his when he was in the crack business. Now, that goes into the immigrants' Mount Rushmore, because I'm going to name my four immigrant Mount Rushmores, and these are four cities, okay, that have a black community, actually black neighborhoods. They have black neighborhoods, or the hood, so to speak, where you have people that have come over from Korea, traveling practically 6,000 miles to get to these places, or even 10,000 miles. So you got people from Korea, Vietnam, China, Nigeria, Kenya, Somalia, Mecca in Saudi Arabia. You have people coming from these far off, traveling 1,000 miles. Like, so you got a whole bunch of them in Central America that they're at the border. Some have already got in. Within 24 months, that time span between 24 to 60 months, some of these people will become millionaires. Now, a lot of them will just have a better way of life. They'll be sustainable. They'll be living sustainable lifestyles. But here I'm using this as a barometer. Because if you're black, white, yellow, green, or brown, particularly if you're black, you see, what's the mind-blowing thing to me is these people travel these great distances to take advantage of these opportunities in black neighborhoods, but a lot of black people that live within a one-square-mile radius of within these communities, for some reason, don't even see that they're standing in their own paradise. Anyway, here's my immigrants for business Mount Rushmore. And this could be different from individuals. Let's see, going from my program notes here. All right, the lady that we covered yesterday, LaTosha Harlins. LaTosha Harlins was 15 years old when she lost her life. She was in the store to purchase a bottle of orange juice that was $1.89. And these numbers I'm going to throw out are very important, too, on how these people will become millionaires within the next 24 to 60 months. Tosh, and this was in, that's why I played the soundtrack or partial soundtrack from the latest episode or last week's episode of Snowfall, because Snowfall takes place in L.A. Freeway Rick Ross, a real human being. He's written two books now. He's got a bunch of videos on YouTube. very credible guest or what have you. And like I say, the government put him at, this is nothing that he put out there, that when he was up strong in that particular business, his sales equaled to what Walmart was going to do. Now, why I'm going to have him on this podcast, this live stream, is we're not going to talk about what you guys already know. We're not going to get into the drug game and all this other stuff. We want to pick his brain on how he set up a sales organization where you can sell toilet paper, peanuts, popcorn, whatever you want to sell. You can have a sales organization that can generate you millions of dollars if that's what you want. That's why we're having them on here, but for sales, because a lot of black people don't talk about sales. All right, so Latasha Harlins, she was killed in South Central L.A., and I'm using her as a barometer because after that, a lot of people say it was due to the Rodney King thing, but a lot of people burned down that store. They did some looting and rioting in Koreatown in South Central L.A. And if we from yesterday, the person who killed her got convicted of, she got a 10-year sentence, but 10 years suspended, $500 in restitution, and she had to pay for funeral expenses, and was on, but she didn't get any jail time. That's why I played the Claude Anderson piece, because the Korean Business Association or Korean Chamber of Commerce, they basically bankroll around the table anybody that they had to bankroll, from the dog catcher to the mayor's office to judges to politicians around the city council, the police chiefs. That's why that lady got that sentence. No prison time. All right? So the black community of Los Angeles, California is one of my picks for the immigrant business Mount Rushmore. You've got, what time is it now? It's 11 o'clock here. Somewhere in Beijing, China, there are people talking about right now. They had an opportunity meeting 2 hours ago. I'm in communication with somebody in Asia practically 7 days a week. So you got people that are 1109 right in Beijing and Shenzhen, China. Or Southeast Asia. That their American dream, which is thousands of miles away, is in the black neighborhood, and they know about Latasha Harlins. But anyway, Los Angeles, the black community, South Central LA, that is one of my picks, using Latasha Harlins' death as a barometer. Because now that's 30 years ago. They've also had Rodney King. And what has happened is, after a riot and destruction and all that, that's a good time to go in when everybody's running out, while the cinders are still smoldering. That's the time to go in and buy stuff. So South Central LA black community, that's my first pick. Second pick, the barometer is Mike Brown. That town right outside of St. Louis. Now, I think he bought, a pack of cigarillos? I don't know, but $6.65, that's what I'm putting it at. I think a pack of cigarettes might cost that $6.65. Now, look, here's another barometer. All right, Latasha Harlins, $1.89. Mike Brown, $6.65. That's how a lot of these people are getting rich. They're not trying to get rich off of large amounts of money. is easy to make $1 million just basically nickel and diming people. Okay, a bottle of orange juice, $1.89. A pack of cigarettes, $6.65. A loaf of bread, whatever a loaf of bread costs in a convenience store or a grocery store. And by the way, tomorrow we should have a live guest who owns a grocery store or stores. But anyway, he'll be on tomorrow. And because I was shocked when he told me how many black-owned grocery stores in the United States. But that's for tomorrow. Okay, Mike Brown. So St. Louis, I'm going to say that metro area, and I haven't been to St. Louis in quite a long time, but I'm looking at that as a land of opportunity. And Mike Brown is did he get killed? And I forgot. Anyway, wherever they had all that rotting and whatnot, of course, it's been a while, but I think that would be a good place. You know, I'm one of these type that when people are running out, I run in. I run out when people are running out because essentially you can get fireside sales. I've bought houses as low as $500 because a lot of people, all you got to do is just hold on to them a little bit and it'll go up in value. So I would say St. Louis metro area is another area that I'm putting that on my Mount Rushmore. The third city of my Mount Rushmore would be, as a matter of fact, let's go back to LaTosha Harris. The cash cow is in your urban areas, particularly in the South Central LA part. But you make your cash flow there, but you can go to Northern California or California that borders on the state of Arizona, and then you can pick up inexpensive properties in those areas and make out pretty well. The third Mount Rushmore location, and once again, the core of all these things is they're all anchored in the black community. Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's where the George Floyd case is happening right now. I understand they shot somebody else up there within the yesterday or whatever. So you got new protests for the person that just got shot yesterday. You still had the George Floyd case going on, and there was a lot of rioting a year ago when that whole thing went out. Well, let's take a look at why I just made my list of immigrant business Mount Rushmores. Number one, the store where all, and then George Floyd, he basically lost his set life over a $20 counterfeit bill. So look at the figures here. LaTosha Harris, $1.89. Mike Brown, I'm putting it at $6.65. George Floyd, a $20 bill. All right. I'm looking at, on the landscape of this, once again, how come anybody that, and with LaTosha Harlins, immigrant store owners that traveled almost 6,000 miles, Mike Brown, immigrant store owners. I don't know where they came from, but I'm sure it was thousands of miles. George Floyd, the person who owns that store now, the guy who said call the police, he's a third-generation immigrant. Third generation. According to him, the only job that he's ever had was working for the family business. His grandparents came over here from, I don't know, somewhere in the Middle East, that convenience store. Now, a convenience store. Now, I'm sure there are people that are third generation that are living in that neighborhood, but their grandparents are praying parents or the local churches that are within a 1 square mile radius of that store, for some reason, didn't recognize. That's why I play that Nine Trends audio so much. Because people that come from thousands of miles, they can see it from 10,000 miles away, but we can't see it from less than 1 square mile away. That's why we're doing this. This is the third week we've done this. We're going to do at least 1 or 2 weeks every year. Like, now, tomorrow, we'll have a guest on who is black who has a grocery store. He sees it. But he doesn't have any competition, which is a good thing. Anyway, so Minneapolis, Minnesota, that's another barometer. If you want to get wealthy, like, because there are going to be more people that come in, more immigrants, that they're gravitating to these areas. And like the Wendy's that got burnt up, anything that got destroyed, personal property that got destroyed, buildings and whatnot, in Minneapolis, trust me, the smart investor got in there and put those properties under contract or bought them before the smoke stopped smoldering. Because you can pick up stuff at a real dirt cheap price when you do that. The fourth immigrant business Mount Rushmore in my list, because now this can be different from person to person, but I'm basing this on high-profile cases so you guys can, matter of fact, if you want to look for a business opportunity in California, the best place to go, in my opinion, is South Central L.A. Go around areas that had the riots for when Rodney King happened and LaTosha Harlins. Mike Brown, the St. Louis metro area, go where it went down with Mike Brown. All right? George Floyd, Minneapolis, go to the neighborhood where they did all that tearing up. Go to those neighborhoods. You're going to find the best opportunities. Because trust me, the people in this country already, or people who are not in this country, we're going to hear success stories on this. 24 to 60 months from now, we're going to hear about some foreigner that came in from the Mexican border that didn't have any money, that walked over 600 to 1,000 miles just to get to the border of the United States. We're going to hear success stories like that within the next 24 months. My fourth immigrant business Mount Rushmore will be, or is, and I'm using this as a barometer, New York City. Actually, I'm going to say New York City and New York State. New York City, already 50%, I think, of the businesses in New York City are immigrant-based already. They're all legal. They got their paperwork in order. They're good with the government and all that. They're at 50% already. Eric Gardner, $6.65. He's another. He couldn't breathe. New York City will continue to be a hotbed for immigrant entrepreneurs to come in, because, see, they've got established networks there now. If you want to get into the nail business, garment business, you name it. So New York's been a sort of, that's why I put it on my immigrant business, Mount Rushmore. And then if you also have to look at New York State, because places like Niagara, New York, in the black community, Buffalo, New York, in the black community, Rochester, New York, in the black community, where you can go set up shop, you got a good consumer base of black folks that are paying in cash, and it's affordable and sustainable to live there. You can find affordable. I used to go to Buffalo, New York, and look for houses. I don't know. I've changed. I've gone rural since then, But, you know, at that time when I was going, you can buy a house for $500 to $700. It needed a little work, but not much when I was doing it. So those are my four immigrant business model Rushmores, and that, you know, I'm basing on high-profile cases that people have heard of. And part of the reason why is on their these immigrants gravitate to these cities, this is in my opinion, is because people that live in these communities don't recognize the opportunities that are there. Number two, they're looking for opportunities gift wrapped with a bow around them. What's killing a lot of the, well, not killing, but preventing, or actually, it's self-sabotage. In my opinion, what's self-sabotaging a lot of the black community in the United States is we're too addicted on a critical mass basis to comfort and convenience. We don't want to build a business from scratch. We want something already established, smooth running operation, and we just collect our checks on a weekly or daily basis or whatever. We don't want to. This is on a critical mass basis because, like, say, tomorrow we got a guest coming on. We had one last week. They built from scratch. And if it's to be honest about it, on a critical mass basis, in my opinion, just LA's opinion, we think too small. Or if it's anything over 30 minutes to 60 minutes away from where we lay our heads at night, it's too much hassle for us. Whereas, now think about it. Let's put a reframe on this. Let's put an immigrant frame on this. Is it worth your while for you and your family to move to another country, learn another language, if you're going to take in $5,000 to $10,000 a day in revenue? Because that's what these people are doing. These immigrant families coming to the United States and going directly into black neighborhoods. I'll say it again. I've said it at least two or three times already. From Seoul, Korea, to Los Angeles, California, is 5,907 miles. If you had the opportunity to earn, to have a gross revenue of, because it's 2021 right now, have a gross revenue where you can take in $10,000 to $15,000, maybe $20,000 a day, would you be willing to go from travel over 5,000 miles to do it? Vietnam, Manila, Philippines, Mecca, Saudi Arabia, all these people, right now, you've got, think about it now, you've got the people south of the border. They're coming from Nicaragua, Guatemala, Belize, Panama. You have people that have already walked over 600 to 1,000 miles to get to the Texas, Mexico, Arizona, or California border. These people have already walked. Some have got in, some in detention, some haven't got in, and some are trying it again. these, what's the thing with Les Brown here, his little speech, you got to be hungry. These people are hungry for that might be sitting in T.D. Jakes' church, nothing against T.D. Jakes. In the black community, for whatever reason, they don't see the opportunity.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars it is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
That's what they're doing. Some of them already know about the tax sales system here in the United States. I know 2 years ago, matter of fact, 2 years ago this month, that was the last time I was in Chicago. I went up there for just one day. I flew out of Orlando. While, as we were boarding the plane, there were about a solid two, maybe three Latino families, you know, with kids, small kids that boarded the plane before everybody else did. And there's a strong Latino community in the Chicagoland area also. But now they're expanding. And they're getting into, slowly but surely, the rural areas up that way. But like I said, they're different immigrant business Mount Rushmore. So instead of talking about who's your Mount Rushmore with sports or entertainment, start selecting some, you know, immigrant business Mount Rushmores in areas where you can go and clean up right now. But the black community, anywhere you go, look at it. The countless of Chinese food places, the countless of, dry cleaners, in Detroit and other places, the convenience stores that the Arabs have, they call them party stores in Detroit. It's straight up gold mine. Straight up gold mine. Let's go to phone lines real quick. 407, your mic is open.
Good afternoon. No, still morning. Good morning, LA. This is Viata with Soul Purpose Healing, and I just love that that audio about the Mexicans because that really does illustrate the problem in the Black community. That when in a lot of ways we're lazy and we don't want to do any work to come together, get
Wait a minute. Before we put the label, the lazy label on there, how about not even recognize, because if you don't recognize the opportunity, you're not going to act on it.
Well, and that part of the problem, I was going to say, part of the problem is our educational system that brainwashes kids from kindergarten that they got to go to college. And that, you know, the whole education, I'm not, and I don't say at the root of the problem is our education from childhood on up, is that we don't have enough adults teaching our children to be entrepreneurs, to learn how to fix houses. They spend $40,000 a year on a college degree for 4 years, and they come out and they don't have a job. So we got to change, I think, first and foremost, we got to change the educational system to start to go back to having shop and technical teaching, technical skills, instead of getting a fancy degree from a fancy college. And nowadays, colleges are saying you have to be vaccinated to come back to school. It's like, oh, this is a great opportunity to guide these students away from college into being an entrepreneur, because I don't know who in their right mind. Well, no. People in their right mind are not going to take an experimental injection just to go to college and then die 4 weeks later, risking that. So this is a great opportunity to steer young people away from 4 years of university or college, unless they want to be a doctor or something like that. But now's the time to steer them into a better educational system that teaches them some life skills, like building houses, repairing houses, the fixing cars. Those are the services that people need, especially wealthy people need. They don't want to fix their own house. They don't want to fix their own car. So if you want a guaranteed job, you got to go back to school and learn the basic skills that we missed in public school. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Thank you.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, what's kind of a mystery to me is HBCUs as they are today. Because a lot of people that come out of these HBCUs, a lot of them don't know a whole lot about black entrepreneurial history here in the United States. A lot of them know about the black townships, black entrepreneurs, and a whole host of other things. I mean, because, for instance, Tuskegee, when Booker T. Washington was still alive, they included teaching people about various building trades and in growing food and all that type of stuff, but they don't do it now.
Right, right. So that's what this whole pandemic should be teaching us, to reset, divine reset. Rethink everything you learned about your health, about your careers, all of that. Time to reset all of that and learn something new and get out of the public education system that teaches you to be a slave and be programmed to remember you don't even remember, you need to use after 4 years of college. So, yeah, this is a great time to reset everything and get our youth especially thinking more entrepreneurial, business-minded, work for your damn self and leave these universities. I'm sorry, HBCUs, you might take a hit on this one because we got to reset this thinking now. Everybody don't need a four-year education when they come out of high school, and that's where we missed it.
Yeah, well, there are many other ways to, like with many of the Amish and Mennonites, I think they go grades 1 through 8, at least Amish do. But they're taught for those who have a family business, they're taught various, I guess they have their own little family schools. And then homeschooling is really booming these days.
So
we have more and more people that are homeschooling.
Yeah, more and more. Mostly Caucasians are homeschooling, but I think even black folks may be getting on that train because they better
We've had a black homeschooler on here. She's been on here probably about 3 times.
Yeah, I talked to her one time to be on my show, but I still don't think a lot of black and large numbers are getting on board with homeschooling because they got to work a job. And most of them, a lot of black families can't afford to just stay home and teach their kids. But there are co-ops that they need to.
Yeah, exactly. They're co-ops now. You just drop the kids off at somebody's house.
So there's ways to do that. But unfortunately, kids have to be sacrificed for mom and dad's choices to make more money. And it doesn't always include their thinking about the best education for their children.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, one of the subjects that is taught in mainstream schooling, I want to get your version on it for 2021, is physical education or health class.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, what do you suggest? Because a lot of people who took the physical PE class and health class, you have a lot of those people who have come out that, you know, they got bad health because of smoking, a toxic lifestyle, I'll put it that way. So what do you think a more practical health curriculum would look like here in 2021 from a homeschool point of view?
Well, you know, I had a homeschool family living next door to me one time, and they were taking their kids to the YMCA a lot. So that's what homeschool groups in her area, in her arena were doing, spending time at the YMCA. That way kids can choose basketball. They even have yoga classes now at the YMCA. So for homeschooling, that might be an option, is to hook up with the YMCA. Or just if the parents are athletic, then just make sure, you know, the kids are going out bike riding and walking. One of the schools, I think it was Finland, who was had the best education in the world, they were rated number one in education. Most of their time, the kids were spending outside playing, and they didn't have any homework, but they were considered to have the best education. So priority, especially after this pandemic, is to help our children learn how to take care of their bodies first and then put the technology and all that in their brains. But a lot of kids are obese now, eating all this junk food, and that should be a top priority now.
Well, let's go back. What do you think a school lunch should look like now? Because in some places they got the tater tots and stuff like that.
Well,
so what would you call a real food lunch? For school kids.
They should all have salad bars. School should have a salad bar so that the kids get used to picking vegetables, you know, choosing vegetables as part of their meal. And then having, you know, some
what
kind
about
of protein.
What about a school that would the kids would actually grow the food?
Well, that's part of their education, you know, home economics. Mm-hmm. That's what we used to. My stepmother was a home economics teacher. That's who taught me how to sew. So those are the type of things that we need to bring back into the school, home economics, where they learn how to cook, sew, clean. All those women come out of school, they don't know anything about cooking and cleaning. And so, yeah, we need to bring those things back, just bringing back the basics if they don't learn it at home.
Well, a lot of them don't learn it at home.
Every school in this country ought to be rethinking their curriculum at this point, because we got too many obese kids and kids who don't know basic home care, taking care of their homes. And then ways to make your being entrepreneur. I mean, it should, to me, they should include self-business, self-ownership, and entrepreneur skills, developing that at a very young age instead of prepping them for college. That has to go.
Well, like you said, unless you're going to get into, I guess, the STEM, the STEM curriculum, you know, science, and people don't want to be engineers and that type of thing.
Right, and they the parents should know as well, observing their children, whether that's their interest, first of all, and whether that's something they should pursue. And so, yeah, it's being a parent is a lot of work these days. If you want your child to come out healthy and with a sane mind, oh, my goodness, we got so many mental illnesses in this country. Right now, people lining up for injections and somebody dropping dead in front of them, and they still want to get an injection. That's what I read on the post recently. So we got a lot of correction to make and healing. You know, Ayanna VanZant was saying the reason she had to stop her show, Fix My Life, because so many people she's seeing are sick and suffering, and they need healing. So I think all of us have somewhat responsibility to pay attention to the needs of our communities and our teacher and our students and our kids, and what are the needs of the community, not just pushing them into college whether they need it or not. It's really time to rethink everything.
Well, you've got people. So, well, here's another thing. Now, this is a time of, I guess, business disruption. Well, you have a lot of people that are earning, I mean, real good money. Well, some of the YouTubers I follow, YouTubers. You have YouTubers, one of the ones I follow, black lady, she's, she'll probably be 25 years old this year, Mary Jane Byron. She takes in anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 a month from a YouTuber. She's traveled to, before she was 24, she had traveled to 100 countries. So her way of getting educated is traveling, watching other YouTubers, learning from them, and that's how she makes her $15,000 to $30,000. And there are quite a few people like her on YouTube. Then you've got some YouTubers who have literally become millionaires. Then you've got quite a few YouTubers, eBay people, Amazon people, that they earn they basically support the family off of what, you know, from their online activities. Because to my knowledge, there's no school or university that offers a degree in being there's no bachelor's of science degree, a bachelor of arts degree in YouTubing.
And you know what, LA, when we train our children to do YouTube, that most of the people who do YouTube have a passion for what they're doing. They love what they're doing, at least what I've seen. So I enjoy watching them because I learn a lot from people who have passion. They're not begrudgingly doing this because somebody told them they got to do it. No, they love this, and they create some really awesome material. And so that's one of the trainings we for our children, is to sit them in front of YouTube and say, now, if you love to do something, you can create this same type of video and make money at it. And then I'm like, oh, really? They don't have to. You mean I don't have to go to 4 years of college? No, you don't have to go to four. If you got a passion for something, this is an opportunity right here. Where you can create a lot of material, a lot of videos, and make money. So YouTube's a good place to start in elementary school, teaching young kids how to create a video of doing something, whether it's making cupcakes or playing with Play-Doh. They got this kid on YouTube. He's a little Chinese kid that my grandkids watch. All he does is go around playing with his toys, making videos, and he's making millions of dollars just playing, having fun, playing with. My grandkids love to watch him. He creates Play-Doh things and put characters and car racing cars. And this kid is making millions of dollars, and he got millions of viewers because kids sit down and watch him. So I'm like, okay, parents, let's get busy here.
Well,
we can do
speaking
this.
Of one, we're going to take a little quick interlude here, but I'm about to play something from a lady that she started out on Instagram. Got a large following on Instagram, crossed over to YouTube, and now she's a millionaire.
There you go.
There's some hoes in this house. There's some hoes in this house. There's some hoes in this house.
I said, certified freak. 7 days a week. Wet ass pussy. Make that pullout game weak. Yeah, you fucking with some wet ass pussy. Bring a bucket and a mop, put this wet ass pussy. Give me everything you got, put this wet ass pussy. Beat it up, nigga, catch a charge. Extra large and extra hard. Put this pussy right in your face. Swipe your nose like a credit card. Hop on top, I wanna ride. I do a kegel, one inside. Spit in my mouth, look in my eyes. This pussy is wet, come take a dive. Tie me up like I'm surprised. That's role play, I wear disguise. I want you to park that Big Mac truck right in this little garage. Make it scream, make me scream. I don't public, make a scene. I don't cook, I don't clean, but let me tell you, I got this ring.
Gobble me, swallow me, drip down inside of me. Quit, jump out for you, let it get inside of me. I tell them where to put it, never tell them where I'm about to be. I run down on them before I have a nigga running me. Talk your shit, bite your lip. Ask for a call while you ride that dick. You really ain't never got him fucking for a thing. He already made his mind up before he came. Now get your boots, hang your coat, but this wet ass pussy. He bought a phone just for pictures of this wet ass pussy. Pay my tuition just to kiss me on this wet ass pussy. Now make it rain if you wanna see some wet ass pussy.
Look, I need a hard hit, I need a deep stroke, I need a Henny drink, I need a weed smoke. Not a garden snake, I need a King Cobra with a hook in it, hope it lean over. He got some money, then that's where I'm headed. Pussy A1, just like his credit. He got a beard, well I'm tryna wet it. I let him piss, now he diabetic. I don't wanna spit, I wanna go, I wanna gag, I wanna choke. I want you to touch that little dangly thing that's swinging the back of my throat. My hickam is fire, punani the sunny is going and drying, it's coming outside, yeah. I run on that stand, the cuz behind me, I spit on his mic and I heat tryna sign me.
Yana, I'm a freak bitch, handcuffs, leashes. Switch my wig, make him feel like he's T10. Put him on his knees, give him something to believe in. Never lost a fight, but I'm looking for a beat. In the food chain, I'm the one that eats you. If he ate my ass, he's a bottom feeder. Big D stand for big demeanor. I can make you bust before I ever meet you. If it don't hang, then he can't bang. You can't hurt my feelings, but I like pain. If he fuck me and ask who's is it, when I ride the dick, I'ma spell my name.
Yeah, you fucking with some wet ass pussy. Bring a bucket and a mop, put this wet ass pussy. Give me everything you got, put this wet ass pussy. Now from the top, make it drop, that's some wet ass pussy. Now get a bucket and a mop, that's some wet ass pussy. I'm talking wop, 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 that's some wet ass pussy. Macaroni in a pot, that's some wet ass pussy, huh?
And that's Cardi B with WAP. And, hey, she started on Instagram. Once again, there is no there's no bachelor's program. No bachelor of science, no bachelor of arts, to say nothing of a master's degree or PhD degree. And the way people are making money these days now she's a millionaire. Not everybody is not making millions off YouTubing, but there are quite a few that are, they're sustaining a household. Their 9-to-5 is doing content and uploading up to YouTube or Facebook. The largest event, actually it's a holiday. It's called Singles Day, and I covered this last year. It's on November. I'm covered again this year. November 11th is Singles Day in China. And that's where people take their smartphones, and you got farmers, you got people selling all kind of products, even in remote parts of China, where on Singles Day, which is November the 11th, Singles Day dwarfs Black Friday. There's nobody offering a bachelor's degree in live streaming. These are disruptors. Apps, Airbnb, those guys, you know, they were facing eviction. And before they even had the Airbnb app, they essentially came out of the hole by essentially putting up a one-page website and renting out their 3 bedrooms. I guess they slept on the floor. And that's how they came out of the hole. Airbnb wasn't even an app yet. And then they started to do meetup groups without the app, the Airbnb app. You know, then when they got the app, then that's when they strategized. But once again, there's no bachelor's degree. There's no bachelor's program. Now, I'm not like I say, some things, like I agree with you, Viata. Some things, like if you want to be an MD, an engineer, some things like that, you're going to have to, you know, go to school, get the 4-year degree, and then go to, you know, the graduates and all that other stuff. But anyway, there's a lot of, there's things that are popping up today that
now,
people will be making money on tomorrow.
Open.
Yeah, you're open. Your phone's
mic?
Open.
Okay.
Your mic's open.
There's some whores in the house. It's a nice beat. Nice beat, L.A., to shake your booty to. Nice day. A lot of people love that because millions have watched that YouTube, but there's consequences for that behavior. You know, you had a show on cause and effect.
Yeah.
And, if the way they pumping out, I know you're just using that as an example, but the way they pumping out.
Cardi B.
Instagram
to mean it, yeah.
We got to train our children to know about consequences because, yeah, that makes a lot of money because people are addicted to porn and who knows what else. But we got to, when we do that, we got to point out there's consequences to that because she can make a whole bunch of money, but at some point, like DMX, her days will be gone. Her days are going to end because the universe is shifting. The cosmos, the universe is shifting to the fourth dimension. And it's not the physical realm that we focus on in that dimension, fourth and fifth dimension. It's a spiritual dimension. And shaking your booty and calling whores in the house is all physical. I know you might think otherwise, but that's the reality. So I'm just saying we got to teach our children consequently, reaping and sowing. You keep sowing seeds of pornography and sexuality and making a lot of money, that's going to come back at you in not a very pleasant way. And DMX is the lesson for us and a lot of other people who were into drugs. As Ayanla said, they fed these artists in their dysfunction. They fed these artists in their mental disorder. So Cardi B is being fed a lot of money in her mental disorder, and she's still hanging on days of a prostitute. And making a lot of money, but it's creative for sure. You got to admit it's creative, but it's going to bite her in the butt one day. And her butt's getting bigger. And they do all the stuff they do to their butts. That's another thing. Have you seen some of the documentaries of people who got really sick?
Yeah,
died?
People have gotten butt injections and that went south.
Oh, my
south.
Goodness.
No pun intended.
You know, what were you thinking? What the hell was going through their mind? What was going through their mind, they wanted to make money off their butt being big. So there's a mental disorder. We got to recognize the mental disorders and the consequences of promoting your mental disorder.
Well, you know, with DMX, and I really didn't follow DMX's career, to be honest about it, until after he passed away. So like last Friday, I watched the documentary about, you know, his life. And what I find interesting, we'll probably do a podcast on it later. What I've noticed about, at least in that documentary and some other things that I've watched on YouTube about DMX, and then some other rappers, is that, and we're talking about earning money, once again, you don't have to, there's no bachelor's of science degree. There's no bachelor's program offered by any university on becoming a rapper. Yet you've got, he was wealthy. He became wealthy. Now, he had a drug addiction, and we had to do a whole show on him. But what I find interesting about a lot of these rappers is they didn't come from you didn't hear them talk about getting reparations. Their victimhood mindset, a lot of them didn't come from a victimhood mindset. And you have we have to do a whole thing on them, but this guy, when was he born? 1969, I think. He was 50 years old.
I think 61.
So he had a rough childhood, got addicted, got on crack like at 14, 15 years old. But the thing is, what I learned is DMX essentially obtained the American dream. Now, if you take out the toxicity and whatnot, but he did achieve the American dream. But like I said, that's a whole different podcast.
Well, a lot of people who have traumatic childhoods like he did, and all, they're driven to survive, number one, because of all the pain they go through. And then they're driven to succeed, to prove something to the people who abuse them, the people who put them down. I think there's such a drive with people like DMX who went through childhood traumas. That's why they succeed the way they do, because they are driven. They have a passion.
Yeah, he was very driven.
Yeah, and overcome the trauma that they, and they're in a lot of pain. That's where the drugs come in. Every person.
Well, that's true.
Gabor,
he took his pain. He took his pain and turned it into music.
Yeah, every addict has a lot of pain usually, and they're just using the drug or the sex to ease their pain. And so we recognize that at some point we just pray they get help, which I think he eventually did. Now they're trying to bring up his drug addiction as an excuse for his death, but that's another show.
Well, that is another show. Let's take another call here real quick. 314, your mic is open.
L.A., did you really have to play this? Ain't nobody in their right mind going to be listening to no mess like that. And that goes to show you how decrepit so many people are if they are subscribing to that. I bet those are the ones that's out there doing the rioting and looting who didn't stay on the straight and narrow coming up, had reached the age of 25, 26, 27, 34, and realized, damn, something is wrong. I ain't where I should be. So who in the heck's going to be listening to some stuff like that? You know, you can go to some countries and lock you up if you play
talking about, but
try to play that in
a
African
out
country
there
and
for
see
it.
What happens. Yeah, try playing that in an African country and see what happens. People talking about we African and stuff, yeah, right. That's another indication to show that you're not. Because if you try playing that in Ghana or Nigeria, your butt's going to be in prison deep. especially Egypt is one of the Arab countries.
Yeah, they're
but no,
conservative.
If that's what you, I don't understand. You know, I only in America will that go on. I think America got too many freedoms, really, because they become costly. And see, those that's in the lower echelon, you got these politicians that breed off of them for votes. Like they're letting the borders become open, promising some trinkets, and then these people will be voting for their political party for now until the cows come home. So that's the thing that destroys a nation when you have that type of decrepitness. And you made some other points on some things. You talked about the grocery store. Everybody can't be no grocery. That grocery store provided food.
Tomorrow for that.
Yeah, that grocery store provided food stuff for probably maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people. Well, you don't need no 2,000 or 3,000 grocery stores. You're only going to have within any population, any place in the world, out of an ethnic group, you're only going to have a handful of persons or a small percentage of that population that's going to get involved in these type of endeavors like what you're talking about.
Correct.
I mean, that's just the way it is. And you're not going to kind of tell Vieta that, no, kids need to get as much a hard education, especially black kids at the bottom of the list. You know that when it comes down to standardized testing, that the black student sits down at their testing station and they have spotted them, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's like 312 to 310 points on the SAT. And even put, they haven't even made a mark on the paper with their pencil. The Asian student starts off with a minus. And Hispanics start off with a minus, with a plus two, which is less than black. Blacks are spotted 310 points. Hispanics are spotted 130 points. Asians are deducted 140 points on the SAT in private institutions before they even start the test. So that's kind of embarrassing. I mean, don't you think? And it also shows discrimination toward Asians. It didn't help that they're smart and that their families do the things necessary and sacrifice in order to make sure that their child excels. So what does that tell the black child?
Huh? I think what it comes down to is, I did a podcast on this maybe a year or two ago. I had to try to find it. If you look at what it really comes down to is basically the Asians put more time into study.
Well,
it's not that they're smarter, but they put more time into
studying does make them smarter.
Well, the more you study, the more you're going to learn it and apply it.
Yeah, studying does make you smarter, make you able to be adverse in many different disciplines and speak intelligently and understand what you're talking about or what's being said. Yes, that comes from putting in effort.
But Asians also have a high suicide rate in China. So they're in the extreme spectrum of studying too much, damn much, because they're driving their students crazy with the suicide. So there's got to be a balance. You know, who's making up these tests in this country that black people are failing or whoever's failing?
There ain't no discrimination in the test.
No, I'm not saying there is. I'm saying who's making them up and what standards. But when that happens in a black family where the kids aren't doing well on the testing and blah, 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 that's a good sign that child needs to take another direction and do something
else. I think what they need to do, they need to, you know, you can't have a high school in Baltimore, Viata, where out of 3,800 high school students, you only had 18 that passed with a proficient rate in math. That's math. There's something wrong going on there. And I think what the problem is black society themselves.
Oh, of course, of course. There's priorities where you got to have better gym shoes and clothes than to be spending time.
Hell, they give you that stuff nowadays. That ain't no excuse. Gym shoes, what is gym shoes compared to Jordans? $200.
Listen, here's the thing, though. I have my stepbrother's daughter is failing in all her classes. But you know what her parents are doing? They're letting her get her nails done. They're giving her false hair. They're giving her eyebrows. They're not doing anything to take away to help her obtain higher scores in school. They're giving her all these extras, hair and nails and false this and that, instead of disciplining her. So that's the part of the problem, too, is that black families are not disciplining their children and guiding them when they don't make good grades, and you don't get the hair, the nails, and the eyebrows and all that bullshit. So that's what's part of the problem as well.
Let me ask you something.
You just brought up, matter of fact, Aaron, after you both something. You used the word discipline, Viata. Now, back in our day, parents were, matter of fact, my mother, I called it all kind of ways. Yardstick, ironing cord, you name it. But these days, if parents did that, you'd have a whole generation of parents locked up. So how can you discipline kids these days? Because time out don't work for everybody. Ask the two guys who shot up Columbine.
I can tell you what you do.
Right,
you
I'm
make
listening.
It available for more parents who are functional to take their children away from them environments. That's another big problem. You got blacks like NAACP organization and individual pundits that don't want to see functional parents take their children out of those environments. They want to keep them all together and espouse on this whole idea about separatism.
Mm-hmm.
The same one that will call a black person who married a white girl a coon.
What did you just say?
I say the same one that would call a black person that married a white woman a coon.
Oh, okay.
Then you have a black man someplace say that he's married to a white woman and he's happy about it. Well, that's his opinion.
Hubert Davis. I don't know what was on his mind when he made that. The statement that he made was,
well, people's probably,
it was totally out of context
about it.
Yeah.
People was probably bothering him about it. That man marry who he want to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, parents can tell their children that, look, you don't go out and mess around with Miss Daisy. That's perfectly fine. That's within that family. People outside the family have no business, but they do, antagonizing this individual. I hear people say that they criticize the people in Detroit, which is 80-some-odd% black or whatever, for electing a white mayor. Well, that's what they wanted to do. What's wrong with a white mayor? If he's a politician who's going to address what you sent them there for.
Right.
Think about it. St. Louis has been Democratic for 72 damn years. 72 years. And look at it.
Well, what's wrong with it, Bianchi, is that people are racist. People are so focused on the color of the skin more than the qualities of the individual that's what's the problem. You got to be colorblind. You got to be colorblind to move into a successful area of your life where when you stop looking at the color of skin and just judge them on their character and their words and their behavior. But we are just a racist society. A lot of, especially black folks. Black folks are just as bad. They come, you can't be racist and be black. Really? Okay.
Now that's something that somebody don't learn from somebody that I call is a nut. It's trying to, once again, create these separate societies. And you know the funny thing about it, you look in their family, the women in their family don't aborted a whole platoon of kids. You know,
right.
If you want to be do that separate stuff, go ahead and do it with your people, your family. Leave mine alone if they don't want to. I tell you something else, too. I was just looking, and I'm trying to find it. I just got through compiling that information, but usually me. But after the Mike Brown incident, blacks start screaming about policing in those communities. Well, you can't be racially profiled when in your community 90% of the people are black. 90% of the people that drive through these areas are black. So how in the heck you gonna be? How in the heck you gonna say is you being racially profiled? Well, that's all that's there. But when you look at how they start screaming about how the police was policing, and police start standing down, you know, when you stop for a motor vehicle infraction, a moving violation, well, the police gonna look at your vehicle and see if your vehicle is in a state that's gonna cause a concern for public safety. Are your tires in good shape? Your windshield washers work? Your turn signals work? They're going to notice all that. And if they stop you for speeding, they're going to also cite you for those other areas, too. They're supposed to, because it's public safety. If you can't produce financial liability, proof of financial liability as required by the state, they should impound that vehicle. Why would you leave it on the street where this person can drive and go out and tear up somebody else's car and don't have any means of financial responsibility for what they cause? But if you look at the data of the tough policing from 2002 to 2014, in August of 2014 is when the Mike Brown incident occurred. That's 12 years. Automobile fatalities in St. Louis area lowered 37%. But after the decry of Mike Brown from 2014 to 2020, which is 6 years, it has skyrocketed to 21.3%, going back up again when people was complaining about the policing. Well, which is best for the community? Tough policing, or for the police to stand down and just let people do whatever they want to in much time to cause all these problems? Then, when the insurance companies increase the rates for people that drive in these areas, that live in these areas, then they put a circle around these areas, which is called redlining, and people get all pissed off and say, they redlining our community. Well, no, redlining is good because it tells you where not, in this particular instance, not to drive and travel. I mean, so it's good.
We have to do a show on that, too.
It tells you about the schools, L.A.
A lot of people, when you bring up redlining, they come up with the, a lot of people that look at, what do you call it, the redlining, they look at it from a victimhood mindset.
Yeah, it tells you about the schools, where not to send your kids to school. Ask the man that's coming on, maybe tomorrow, it tells you about food stores, services, medical providers, and that which helps make a solid life for a family. You got to be aware of red line areas. They're there for a reason. If you want to live there, well, insurance company is saying you can't live there. They're not saying you can't drive there. They saying that if you do, your premium is going to be higher because of the risk. In many cases, people choose not to pay the added amount for being charged to operate and live in those areas. Then folks get mad. The politicians get mad, too. All my constituents is gone.
Well, Yeah, we need to do.
Now you talk about immigrants. You know, one family that you left out, you can consider is the Patels and the hotel accommodations that they control. Their hotel accommodations gross like $28 billion a year in the United States. And the first Patel started off, he came out of Mexico into Texas, I believe, during the time of the internment of Japanese nationalists in this country, when the United States was at war against the Japanese Empire. And to inter someone who's a nationalist of a country that you are at war with is a good idea. Especially at that time when you weren't able to compile intelligence to know exactly who's in your country. It may have been the formation of a fifth column that would attack you from within. But the place that he stayed in, the Japanese person sold it to him for $120, I believe it was. I'm not sure. $120 L.A., and look at them today.
It's interesting. You know, when I go out to Taft, Oklahoma, because Taft doesn't have any accommodations. They used to, but they don't now. In Moscow, I was seeing Moscow yesterday, like 20 minutes away. And there's a whole row of motels owned by, I guess, a lot of them are Patels, but all of them are family-based. I mean, they got their own living quarters right there, but it's, you're right, they have that's another opportunity that they have taken advantage of in this country.
Yeah, and that's not the only one. You got them in many different areas that's not mentioned. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Matter of fact, to come to think about it, let's see. I'm looking there. It's quite a they. Boy, there's a bunch of opportunity here that we haven't capitalized on. But there are others. There's always opportunity. We just have to recognize it and capitalize.
Well, you know,
like, say tomorrow
one reason
we have the guest you recommended on.
One reason, I'm going to try to get you another guest, too, that I worked with them, teaching them how to do security. Matter of fact, I was just looking for one of them telephone number, but I get it. But the emerging industries that's going to be involved around what's called artificial intelligence. And that is already producing opportunities that many people are taking advantage of, especially Asians. When you look at, I was looking at something on nanorobots that devices that they can inject in your bloodstream that will be controlled to go to certain areas and wage war against what it is that's doing you harm. Clean out plaque inside your arteries. Robots that the size of bumblebees that can be used for surveillance, espionage, and also in military applications. The uses of materials, carbon fibers, new propulsion systems, devices that inventions, or should I say technology that's going to be used in order to, whereas we will be able to travel in the sky on pre-prescribed vector routes like we used to see the Jetsons do on the cartoons.
Well, that's why people don't want to take this injection, because they can do all kind of shit. And they want to put that in you, and you know the technology that's available. People know or wise it might be a chip in that injection. It's very possible. So what makes you think it wouldn't be in there? Because these assholes or these insane egos are ready to control everybody if they can. So that's why the resistance to the injection right now. people are wising up. They know how the technology is. And
well, it might be.
They've been making movies about this for a while, warning us it was coming, and now they want us to trust them so we can be safe with an injection where 99% mm-hmm. of the people are overcoming the disease. So be careful out there.
Well, you know, I understand what you're talking about, but there are benefits in order to be able to use these sorts of technologies, artificial intelligence, in order to make improvement on people's lives.
Yeah.
When they're sick.
Just put it in my blood, though.
These are medical procedures that people are agreeing to, and it's saving their life.
So they think.
Well, what's on? You got a few days here. What's Friday on Soul Purpose Female Solution?
Friday health and well-being. I haven't even decided. So much going on right now. But I have a guest. I think my guest is coming, a registered nurse who I've known for many years, and we just reconnected. So she's one of the holistic health professionals out there in this spiritual battle, bringing forth truth about our bodies. And so she's going to probably join me. And we're going to have a talk about holistic health, well-being, and what our role is in these difficult times.
Now, define what holistic health is.
That's taking into account your mind, your body, and your soul. And too often, allopathic medicine just looks at the body. They don't talk to you about your relationships that are causing you a bunch of stress. So holistic is just taking the whole being, which includes not just mind, body, spirit, but there are pain bodies outside of you. There's so many aspects of this human dimension that traditional medical doctors don't take into account. That's why you got a bunch of people on drugs and now mental illness, because they haven't been dealing with the emotional soul aspect. So that's holistic.
The faith-based people, don't they do that, the faith-based people?
No, they're in denial because Jesus can fix everything.
Okay.
You know, I was going to say another thing, too. You're talking about education. If your African-American child is educated in the areas where there's high demand, like L.A. mentioned, STEAM, some people like to say put some more acronyms in there. They guarantee jobs, just about. Because I witnessed, I've told you before, those National Society of Black Engineers annual convention 2017, 2018, 2019, before COVID hit, I've seen black children, black students be hired in the hundreds by one company. You know, Northrop Grumman in 2017, 2018 hired over 400 2 years in a row off the convention floor, not including the other hundreds that was being hired by the other corporations that was there in attendance. And in 2019, Lockheed Martin done likewise in hiring STEM graduates.
Well, you know, that's all well and good, but Lockheed Martin is a population of people. I lived close to that location, and I had one of my neighbors work for Lockheed Martin for, like, I think 20, 30 years. He couldn't even get off the floor when he retired. He was so stressed. They had ambulances showing up at Lockheed Martin every day, he said. He worked up in this tower. The stress level at Lockheed Martin is off the chain. So the thing about training children to get these jobs that are well-paying is you got to have a passion for what you're doing, not just get a J-O-B because it makes a lot of money. We have to train our children to develop their passion first, then get a job, even if it ain't paying well. At least you're not going to be stressed out of your mind. That's what's happening is, I'm making $1 million, but you got to take all kinds of medication to maintain your stress level. So,
well, that's not
that's
everything. My workers work 300 feet off the ground putting up buildings. They didn't have those problems.
Yeah.
And if you leave it up to children to seek out their passion is being a rapper.
Yeah.
NBA basketball player, football.
You got people like music. You have a child who likes music, then direct them into playing some instrument. You have to watch it.
Well, that ain't working, Viola.
Well, some people, some people, what they call it, they like this. You know, they like a friend of my best friend in high school and college. He would be called a nerd, but he later did basically what Bianchi was talking about. He majored in because math and science was his thing in high school. He majored as an electrical engineer. That was his major in college, and he got hired his junior year before he graduated by his aircraft.
You're absolutely right. That you steer your children into the area that's going to pay money. You can't complain about the disparity in wealth, and you have the majority of your students enrolled in low-paying majors the way it is. Psychology.
And with a lot of those, the STEM or even the medical professions, I would even say law to a certain degree, those people that, from my observation, you become an engineer or a doctor or even a lawyer not because of the money. Because of the academic program is so rigorous that if you're going strictly for the money, you're going to wash out. People that get enrolled in those programs, they do have a passion for it, typically.
Well, you got to be prepared for it. If you're not prepared for those, and that start off as early as the third grade, preparing your young people for math and science and so on and so on and so on. You remember I sent you a video on the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, L.A., and it's in Chicago, on the floor where the instrumentation players are, there was no black people. In the upper deck where you had the chorus, I think you had one person up there that was black. And those jobs start off paying $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. Up to $150,000 as a musician in orchestras. Every big city has them.
True.
You know one of your favorite movies with Clint Eastwood, Hang 'Em High, Fistful of Dollars, that music? Those are played by the Denmark Philharmonic Orchestra.
Well, we are absent in quite a few things. What you just mentioned, we're absent from ranching, the guest that we're going to have on tomorrow. man, the information that he shared with me yesterday was mind-blowing. And that deals with food.
Those things, if you look at China, for instance, and their parliament, or their officials, they have engineering degrees. What kind of degrees do our African-American officials have? Well, political science and philosophy. And also, well, now you see more of them have a theological degree, preachers getting into politics.
There are quite a few of them. But the whole civil rights, hijacked by preachers.
You look at what's going on down in Georgia, where they complaining and talking about blacks are being oppressed, suppressed, that is, in voting because they chose to make changes in their voting rules, which they should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's their right to do it as a state legislature. The Constitution gives them the right to do it. Companies should not be holding state government bodies hostage with the threat that we're going to move if you change your voting rules and regulations. What kind of crazy mess is that? Mm-hmm. And when Major League Baseball decided to go to Colorado, look what it's doing to black businesses in the city of Atlanta. The baseball team had already built a stadium outside of the city because of concerns, and we know what those concerns are. because the people that patronize them don't want to come in the city. So they had to take the daggone entertainment to where the people are. Then they make some agreement with China and look at China's human rights record with some of its provinces. The Wieners, or is it the Wickers? The Wickers, with one province of Chinese, that community of Wickers. Look how they're treated in China. Well, why come you don't consider that? Look how the Nigerians are treated in China. Why come you don't hold that? Say, well, China, we ain't coming to you because you oppress, suppress people. That's a bunch of bull crap.
All right, well, we got a guest on tomorrow, thanks to you.
Another thing, too. Mm-hmm. You're talking about immigrants. Look how the Vietnamese control the fish markets. So I guess you could call it fish. They're taking it out of the ocean and shrimp. And also, it's another area that they are very prominent in. That's because where they come from, they've done that. So when you look at the trawlers and the fish boats in the Gulf and coming up around the East Coast, a lot of that business is controlled by Vietnamese.
We got to find our niche. But some of us have already. There's more of us have to do it. Let's see. Let's take another caller here. 346, your mic is open.
Yeah, good morning, L.A., and Bianchi, Viola.
Morning.
Yeah, I've talked about that. You know, Houston is literally 50 miles from the Gulf of Mexico, and we have a little island called Galveston, and another little city close to Galveston is called Kima, Texas. That's why all the boats and all that come in, all the fish. And my uncle told me a story. I think it was back in the 50s. I don't know when, but a lot of it was then that during that time that a lot of these Vietnamese, when they were moving here into Texas, KKK was killing them. And I laugh and I tell people all the time. I say, well, they didn't have not one march. There was no complaining. They just kept quiet and kept doing what they're doing. And now, if you go down there to the Gulf, down there to Kima, Texas. If you're going to get any kind of seafood, it all comes through the Vietnamese, through the Asian people. You know, that's the only way you're going to get it. Ain't no way around it. So our focus as a people has been literally on the wrong thing. And that's on color and racism instead of on focusing on education and progress. You know, so.
Now, Warren, you don't stop. I know the next time I come, I mean, actually leave the airport in Houston. Seems like Houston's got some black-owned family restaurants that are doing all right. Well, you're down there. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah, we have a lot of, especially when it comes to food. There's a brother by the name of Marcus Davis here in Houston that owns the Breakfast Club. And you'd be surprised. You have people coming in there spending. I know last time I went, me and my friend, you end up spending probably about 60, 70 bucks for breakfast.
But did y'all have something to take home for lunch or dinner at that price?
Wait a minute. No, you see them pictures Warren be posting? I know that costs at least
$60. Yeah, I've seen some of them pictures. That's a lot of food. And I had to take some of that home and eat off it to the next day.
You know, Houston is a very diverse, one of the most diverse cities in the United States. I mean, you got a melting pot of all kind of different people's cultures and ethnicities and here, and that's what makes the city so much a lot of fun because we got all types of restaurants, man. I mean, you know, whether it's Egyptian, we got some Egyptian restaurants. We got Ethiopian restaurants. We got it all. So. Just come in and take
I saw a couple of videos where it is, I don't know, because I like burgers. So it was one black-owned place, I think it's been in the family for God knows, but those burgers they make look good. So I said, I need to come down here just to try one of them burgers.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to fly, we used to fly down to Kentucky Lake, St. Louis, for breakfast. And oh, you just go get a hamburger and make a hamburger cost about $140. We
must be a good burger and a big one.
$140 hamburger. No, but like you know, here's the thing: you hardly see blacks. Well, there are some blacks down on the Gulf that have fishing boats, but they don't have the latest modern design boats. From what I took it on the story that I wrote, read about. Now, groups could help them obtain the better equipment that they need in order to be more prosperous in that industry. And surely they would pay it back. That's the way you get involved in industries and help it to expand. If you work that principle out with this particular down there in the Mississippi Gulf, then you can get ideas on taking it further than that, going up the East Coast. Heck, if you really want to do some adventurous fishing, go out there in the North Atlantic, where the Norwegians have been doing it for decades, for years. There's some rough waters out there. Bring in the halibut and so on and so on and so on. They get halibut.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they catch the halibut in those waters, take it back to their country, or take it ashore to their country, process it, and then send it to the U.S.
Yeah, there are plenty of opportunities. Well, before Blog Talk kicks us off, would they drop us yesterday or the day before? I think it was yesterday. So I don't want to get caught off guard again. What was last Friday when they dropped it? Yeah, that was bam. All right, well, we'll be back tomorrow with a live guest from St. Louis. Pianki, you already know that, because I'll probably talk to him again today, because I was just taking notes while I was listening to him. So anyway, everybody have a good rest of the day.